Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, good to see you're here, good to see you're happy. Manchester United won over the weekend, so congratulations on that. The Las Vegas Aces did not. So, are we going to get a little House of Dragons, some fire breathing from you today?
I don't know how to feel about you wrapping all of that up within the same sentence, but House of the Dragon is good, by the way. Have you been watching?
No.
Of course not.
Dog, I watched Thrones. I watched all of Thrones. I don't know. You're gonna have to sell me on pre-Thrones.
It's entertaining stuff, man. It's entertaining stuff.
I bought the album. Uh-huh. I watched the game. You need to sell me on some more dragons, all right?
Oh man, it's a whole lot more house drama. It's also cool just to get the backdrop on the Targaryen house. And we're not doing a House of the Dragon pod.
Oh man, anyway, well, that's easy. I can do a summary. They was wilding and dragons breathing fire. There you go.
I'm not letting you do this to me. I see the set being ran. I'm not letting you do this to me. You are not about to. No. No, watch the show. Have you seen Hustle yet? Still haven't seen that, huh?
No. We'll get there.
I'm gonna need you to do better. Speaking of people that have actually done better, shout out to Aces forward Jackie Young for winning the Most Improved Player Award this season. She received 32 of the 56 votes. I don't know if that was a surprise that she won the award. Just the improvement for her as a driver, as a shooter in particular. Shooting north of 43% from three this season. It was a very large leap from where she was last year. The volume was up as well. Jumpers kind of transformed her game offensively. I find myself a little bit more surprised with the voting results. Like, one, her only getting 32 is interesting to me. Beyond that, I guess I'll ask you this. How did you feel about Sabrina too?
You know exactly how I felt about Sabrina too. You know precisely how I felt about Sabrina too. And you know what? Here's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. I kind of figured, based on the Ja Morant thing and based on what you said, I knew y'all would do the Sabrina thing. I knew it was going to happen. 10 uh-huh. votes, cool. I got you. If you want to say, hey, she was this and now she's this, I don't have the energy to fight that. But y'all doubled down with 4 votes for Kelsey Plum? How do you use the same strategy for 2 different players? She's on the team with Jackie Young, who was clearly the most improved player, going from literally X to Y. And you no, Kelsey Plum was better. Huh? Help me understand. Y'all did it with 2 great players.
I can't justify the Kelsey one. Like, the Sabrina one I get.
Look, the Kelsey one is right in that same wheelhouse. Well, she was this, and now that she's a top tier player, MVP candidate, hitting threes all over the place. Da, 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 it's the same thought.
Is that the announcer voice for you?
That's what they sound like to me.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't know about, because I guess for me, if I'm not mistaken, this ballot is another one that was just you pick who you think should win versus here's your top 3 or your top 5. And so I do wonder, if you're choosing Kelsey, the line of thinking has to be the leap she made from point A to point B last year.
Wait, that makes it worse. You telling me these are first place votes? Like first, like you are the most improved player? Oh, nah, man. No, nope.
So I'm just like, why are you taking Kelsey over Sabrina if that's the line of thinking that you're going with? Also, 7 players received the vote for this award.
None of them are named Aaron McDonald. I'm upset about it.
No Aaron McDonald, which I guess the year 2 thing is what bitter, I guess. I don't, whatever. How is Ezzie McBagor just not, how does she just not get a vote?
Han
got a vote. Like, how does Ezzie not get the, how does, with all due respect to Gabby Williams, and we'll talk about the storm shortly.
Gabby Williams slander.
It's not even Gabby Williams slander. Like, I feel like this is more, oh, I didn't know Gabby Williams was good versus Gabby Williams improved.
Well, Nikias, I'm not going to check your age real quick, but that kind of was the whole vibe with the whole most improved player for a long time. Hey, we didn't actually think you were good, and now you are. So here you go. Aaron Brooks.
Wow. Not an Aaron Brooks straight on the podcast.
Hey, but no, Ryan Anderson, our bad.
Are we just going after former Rockets at this point? I don't mean that as disrespect to Gabby at all. Like, she is a tremendous player. But, like, she was this kind of defender when she was in Chicago. Like, the driving's been there. The secondary and transition playmaking has been there. Like, this very much feels like, because of the whole contract suspension, all that different stuff, and now she's on the Storm, who are very good, like, it's more visibility for her, which she deserves because she's good. But, like, to argue that she was the most improved player this year, like, I don't get what that case is.
Well, that's the difficult part, because basketball is subjective, and someone may have really just finally seen the totality of a Gabby Williams this year and understood, oh, wow, no, she's really good. I did not know. You got to remember, again, this was the My Fault OG award.
Not the My Fault OG. But, yeah, I can't get there. But, and just beyond the Gabby point, if you're going to give a Storm player a vote, it has to be Ezzy. How is it not Ezzy?
Easily. 56 people did not vote for her.
I am not letting you do this to me. I just... Ezzy was like in the early defensive player of the year race this season. Like, she was... The Tina Charles move couldn't have moved the needle that much to where someone went with an entirely different Storm pick.
I think I know what you're doing here, and I think we just need to delay and stop delaying the inevitable.
What does that mean?
Did you check the weather forecast in Las Vegas yesterday?
Ah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We can go right into Storm Aces while we're here. The Storm did get a game one victory, stole home court from the Las Vegas Aces with a 76-73 victory. Honestly, I feel like I should let you start, because, like, I have a whole thing.
No. Oh. Absolutely not. We are going to start. And did you want to give out the stats? The lead us in with the statistics, or are we just could. Getting are we getting full Lady of Rage today?
We're not going to get full rage. Like, the stats are the stats, but no, Jewel Lloyd led all scorers with 26 points, Breonna Stewart with 24.6 boards, Tina Charles with a franchise playoff record for the Storm, 18 rebounds along with 13 points, Sue Bird with 12 assists. She has committed one turnover in the postseason so far.
If you want to say it again, say it again for the folks in the back. Just say it again for the folks in the back. You know, the thing, just put your two, put your hands in front of your mouth and it goes louder.
Sue Bird has committed one turnover in this postseason run so far. 12 assists, huge driver of their transition attack in this one. But I will talk about the Storm a little bit later.
Oh, wait. Okay. You're going full.
See, okay. This is why I wanted you to go first, because I do. I rewatched the game.
Before your ISO, I'm sorry. I just want to get one thing out of the way.
Okay.
The half court offense.
Oh, boy. Let's get into the Aces half court offense, or what was supposed to be their half court offense that just wasn't super existent for most of the time. The Seattle Storm are an elite defense. They have tremendous helpers. Without Gabby Williams, the perimeter on-ball defense takes a little bit of a hit. But this is a team that is active, knows how to rotate. We've talked about this on the podcast a few times, how well they're able to switch and switch themselves out of concede mismatches. The pre-switching is very good for them. They are able to take away gaps. They're able to disrupt ball handlers. They're able to force turnovers when they really have it going. Seattle has a tremendous defense. I don't know how much of a chance they even had to prove how good their defense was in the first half of this game, because the Aces half court offense was so bad from a process standpoint. They let the Storm defense off the hook for a large majority of that first, for the first quarter in particular. The lack of detail in the half court offense, I think, bothers me more than anything. Like, you look at the box score, the first thing that's going to stand out to you, one, they shot terribly from three, but that happens sometimes. Second thing that's going to stand out, or first, depending on what you're looking for, is that Asia Wilson only took 10 shots in this entire game. She had one field goal attempt in the fourth quarter. That's not going to cut it. And as the podcast that is consistently, and as the podcast host that is consistently questioning the Connecticut Sun, and how you have an MVP on your roster, you can't get them the ball, or you can't generate good looks for them, I have some questions to ask about how Asia Wilson took 10 shots in this game.
The answer, once again, is the half-court offense. I've been the podcast host telling you that all year.
This is very true. You have. And, buddy, the usage was weird with Asia. But beyond that, I'm looking at what the Aces are trying to run. This was one of the worst screening performances I've seen in a long time. And I think you feel that against, one, just against a team that's as good defensively as Seattle, like, you need to do everything you can to create advantages against them. But, like, it really stood out with some of the ball screens that Asia Wilson was involved in. The screens just weren't there. Didn't really help the guards get free, which then in turn allows Seattle to stay home, which then also allows them to kind of load up on Asia if necessary. You're not getting easy looks there. I look at how Kia Stokes was treated in this game. The Storm ignored her completely off the ball. And I think if she's going to get that kind of coverage, like, it was cool to see one high post flash to try to set up a high low that Breonna Stewart just blew up because she's a defensive player of the year caliber defender. But it's nice to see that random flash. And I understand the notion of having her kind of roam around the short corner and the dunker spot to, because they're not going to care about her beyond the arc. Where are the flares? Where are the pin-in screens? Kia Stokes is the best screener on the roster, and she just wasn't utilized as an off-ball screener like that. Not outside of the design, anyway. We can talk about some of the staggers that he ran for Kelsey Plum that wasn't super screened well for either. But there was just so many detail slash process things that I didn't like from the Aces.
Now, folks, you got to understand that Kais is a big process guy. He's all about the process. Good process leads to good results. Got to understand that. One thing that in the build-up to this series that jumped out, we both spoke on it, was just how comfortable the Storm were switching guards onto Asia Wilson and saying, hey, we'll live with that. We'll find a way to result in it. And in this game, it wasn't even really just as much, hey, we're going to screen and switch out of it. We're just not going to let her post. And you talked about Stokes. Tina Charles was roaming.
Yeah.
Roaming, literally, to the point where there were times where she was just sitting in Asia Wilson's lap if Stokes was on the perimeter. And to your point, how do you now take that and exploit that to your advantage where, hey, maybe you turn that into a quick dribble handoff, Draymond Green-esque or adjacent. I'm not sure the Aces were prepared for that level. And the switching was consistent. It didn't matter who it was. They're going to do it. How many times Jewel Loyd was on Asia Wilson, now the help comes or the help comes. How much of a focus was there for the Aces to get the ball to Asia in the right spots at the right time? I guess would probably be my biggest thing. And in rewatching it, to your point, I think kind of what makes it stick out a little bit more is just the philosophy that each team had. Like, you go back to what the Storm were doing with Breonna Stewart. I want to say it was early in the third quarter. Sue sets a wide pin down for Stewart. The Aces switch Kelsey Plum onto her. Sue spaced in the left corner, the strong side corner. Talbot's at the top. Sue is literally waving for what felt like 28 seconds for Talbot to just move in space more to open space up for Studio to work. That's process. Like, if you go back to the game, look how much you see the Storm pointing and communicating. Once they get the matchup they want, hey, let's get to our spots. Let's play out of it. And then you compare that with the Aces letting Tina Charles just sit in Asia's lap. You compare that with the fourth quarter. I don't remember when it was. It was late, though. It took them 12 seconds to get to Asia Wilson and Stokes screening for Chelsea Gray. Storm switch everything. Jewel Lloyd's on Asia Wilson. Asia Wilson goes to the post. Tina Charles is trying to get to the matchup. Lloyd's trying to fight for her life before any of that can develop. Guess who's driving right towards that post up? Kelsey Plum.
Yep, it was with, and Jackie Young is like relocating to the right corner. The ball goes out of bounds. Tina Charles able to knock the ball out of Kelsey Plum's hand late in the fourth, like a minute or something left in the game.
And then again, you compare it and contrast it with what the Storm were doing. They get the same scenario. Okay, you guys switch Jackie Young on to Breonna Stewart. We're going to stop everything to make sure we get that post up. Mm-hmm. You double, which is great. Steffi Talbot cuts from the left wing to the right corner. Mm-hmm. Kick to Sue, kicks it right to Talbot. Now you're scrambling. She drives. More help comes. You got to sink on Tina Charles. Kick to Jewel Lloyd.
And that's the shot that gives them the lead, 74-73 and 4.
Process. I think that's what hurt the Aces more, just because the Storm were literally doing it, and the Aces, it just didn't feel like, they were like, ah, okay. And it's weird because it kind of reminds me in a sense of game one against the Mercury, where the Mercury were like, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're not letting Asia do anything. And they were aggressive, but it still kind of felt like maybe they went away from it. The Aces have to figure out a way to get Asia more involved.
They absolutely do. And like, just to add on to that, the Storm did do a very good job of showing the early help. Like, it stood out with what Tina Charles was doing, or whoever was defending, air quotes, but defending Kia Stokes. They were able to roam off. But also, even when Asia got elbow touches, whoever's defending someone above the break, and this also would frustrate me with the Aces, because it's like, you're setting up an action for Asia Wilson. She'll get a cross screen, come up to the elbow, and Jackie Young is one pass away. And Jackie Young is shot incredibly well. Why is Kelsey Plum in the opposite corner if you're trying to set up an ISO? Like, you know that Seattle wants to dig. They're showing help. Like, you already have to worry about Kia Stokes being ignored. You don't also want to put the shooter that Seattle cares the least about on the perimeter right next to your MVP, who has not shot well and is looking for areas to attack. Why are you doing that?
I think there's more in the bag with Asia. You know, it felt like a lot of spacing. Didn't feel like there's as much of the off-ball actions, as much of the movement into the post-ups. There's more of a variety that they could have displayed that I don't feel like they went into. Now, I don't think we'll see that going forward. I think there'll be a renewed effort, especially once a team shows their hand. Now it's on you to exploit that in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is what you're doing. Let's make this work. For the Aces, it's finding ways to not just use Asia, but kind of flip the Storm's defense against them. Because it never felt like the Storm really had to blink. They had tough moments. Let's not get it wrong, but they never really had to blink. Can we get Asia matched up against Stewart and now go to an elbow ISO? Will they be less likely to help in that scenario? Mm-hmm. Can we get Tina Charles involved in the matchup where now Asia's facing up? How does that work? Can we run some inverted pick and roll? There are other things that they can do to maybe open things up. And now you've reestablished Asia. And now you can get back to some of the things you're running, because that's always something you can go to. Mm-hmm. But it's just going to take a little bit more work than, hey, we show up and we're here. Especially with how the Storm are defending the Aces guards. Unders are still there. Pretty much the one consistent threat. I don't want to say Kelsey wasn't a consistent threat, but the one who probably made them think the most was Chelsea Gray. And that goes to how they, in the fourth quarter, they went to more empty side, empty corner, pick and rolls to try and get the Storm to at least blink, open up a couple rolls for Asia there. So I think it's more about opening things up, countering, and then using that to your advantage.
I would love to be a fly on the wall for the film review that took place after this game on the Aces side. I do. Because, like, the offense annoyed the life out of me in this one. It annoyed me in real time for those who were in the watch party with us. The rewatch was even worse, because now I'm able to just pause and rewind, like, wait, no. So you actually went with this. You actually go with the... I think back to the second quarter, just to understand, like, they just weren't nailing the little things consistently. Late in the second quarter, they run the stagger from the right corner for Kelsey Plum. She curls off. Sue Bird is trying to chase and fight over screens. Kelsey Plum gets a layup out of it. They run the exact same thing the second time. Tina Charles shows on that second screen to kind of cut off the drive for Kelsey Plum. Sets up a 2v1 on the right side of the floor. And this is where I'm like, all right, bet. Kia Stokes is just going to set a pin-in screen here. Asia Wilson's going to have a wide open three on the right wing. It's going to be one of the cleaner looks that she's had all game. And Kia Stokes just doesn't get contact on anyone. And Seattle's able to recover and load back up. And the possession peters out for the Aces. I'm just like, you can't have these lapses against a team like Seattle. You have to make them work. And if they slip at all, because you made them blink, you made them show something different than literal next possession, because you just got a Kelsey Plum layup. When you have them thinking, capitalize, hammer the little things, continue to create open shots. And that's how you're able to build your flow. And they just did not do that consistently. And then we get to the defense. I don't know what made them go with the trap to start early. But like, fine, this is the coverage that they primarily use to begin the season. They are very good at it. I don't get using it on just about everyone. And no matter where the screen was set, Jewel Loyd, 30 feet from the basket, you probably don't need Kia Stokes blitzing that. The containment on those traps were very bad. The guards were able to just kind of dribble around those. And the pickup point on the slip behind that trap was also just not very good. The amount of short rolls in which Breonna Stewart or Tina Charles were able to make deep catches, or they were maybe they were able to make the early catch and they had two or three dribbles to go before they got picked up. It's like something has to give. You can't have both of those problems happen at the same time. You either need to cut off what the ball handler is doing, make them string it out, and now your defense kind of rotate and recover behind that. Or at the very least, if you're forcing out the hand early, you got to meet a Tina Charles on the catch. You have to meet Breonna Stewart on the catch. And so, like, I remember looking after the game at what kind of the shot profile was for both of these teams. It's like, yeah, it's a heavier dose of mid-range shots for Seattle. Like, they didn't take a ton of shots at the rim, and they didn't take a ton of shots from three. And so, like, you zoom out, it's like, okay, well, bet. You made Seattle take a bunch of mid-range shots. They only scored 76 points. It was a three-point game. Very cool. But even the quality of the mid-range and, like, outside the rim but inside the paint looks for Seattle, they were so good because the Aces just didn't make them feel them for large swaths of the game, and particularly in that first half. We did see them go to more of the switching in the second half. I think if you want to have your big up without switching, like, just have them at the level and drop back. Like, I think that's going to be a more natural coverage for Kia Stokes or Ileana Rupaire, who only played, I think, 10 minutes in the game, mostly because her containment on those traps were just not very good at all. And I just don't think Becky trusted her enough to play her big minutes. And that's going to become, like, that's going to be key moving forward in the series. Like, well, I don't think we're going to see De'Erica Hamby in the series. And so the big room is going to be, like, can you get enough offensively out of Kia Stokes? Can she knock down enough of those push shots in the 6 to 8 feet range to kind of keep Seattle honest or find other usages there in the half court? Or can Ileana Rupaire, like, hold up in space? She has the mobility for it, and she's had good flashes this year, but these are the Seattle Storm. They don't stop moving, especially when they get in their flow on the offense, on the offensive end. So can Ileana Rupaire hold up enough defensively and defend the multiple actions that Seattle can go to? Can she navigate help and things of that nature? Because if she can, the playing time is going to be there for her, because she made Vegas's first three of the game in the first quarter. Like, the spacing is going to be important for her. And I think part of helping open up things for Asia Wilson is going to be having more space. Tina Charles isn't going to sit in Asia's lap and just roam off completely of Ileana Rupaire. It's not going to be a hard sellout, but it's not going to be 4-on-5 like it was for large portions of the game one. And so the big room is going to be a very big key for the Aces in this one. But man, there's just, they just didn't nail the details. Like, I tweeted about it after the game and I rewatched it and felt even worse about it. Like, they just didn't. The screening was bad. Some of the spacing was bad. Where they were spacing certain players was not good. Defensively, the tone just wasn't set, because they just fed Seattle open looks. And luckily, it was a game in which both teams shot poorly from three. I think I remember tweeting at halftime, like, the fact that the Storm aren't up 20 right now is kind of amazing.
So it's safe to say you went from yuck to mad to yuck again very quickly.
We're back on that game. One was absolutely a yuck from the Aces standpoint. And still, they led late in the fourth.
Yeah, let's say all this Aces
all
lead.
This and they could have. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's very much still a series. I mean, if Drake goes from 0 to 100, Nikias goes from 100 to 0. It's kind of wild.
I don't know how I feel about that. I'm going to be honest.
Neither do I, but it's fine. I'm glad you mentioned the defense part because it's very interesting. Because the Storm early on weren't afraid to put two on the ball either. Neither were the Aces, which was an interesting dynamic. And now it becomes throughout this series, who can nail the other coverages? Who can hit the blend? Who can hit the nuance there? Because I don't know how comfortable the Aces feel with putting two on the ball, especially if Sue's going to be passing like that. But Jewel Lloyd's going to be playing like this. You got a decision to make. So how do they feel going forward there? And can the Storm keep hitting the blend on the defensive end and mixing in their coverages with their late switches, with two on the ball, with automatic switches? That's going to be fun to watch. Stephanie Talbot got revenge, though.
Yes, she did. A solid outing for Stephanie Talbot, who, one, held up more defensively than I thought she would. Also, just wasn't tested all that much, which was interesting to me. I feel like I say these things and I just have, like, possessions flashing in my head. Like, now I'm thinking of second quarter again, Chelsea Gray setting up an empty corner pick and roll and trying to attack Stephanie Talbot. And Asia sets the screen, but she's rolling to the middle of the floor. Breonna Stewart just jumps out, knocks the ball out. And I'm just like, why are we?
You are in the mud, sir. Let me say, Stephanie Talbot, real quick.
No, Stephanie Talbot was very good. The major, before I went off on my tangent, thank you for reeling me back in. Stephanie Talbot was good. Her spacing was very important. Only one of three from three, but she almost single-handedly disrupted what the Aces wanted to do from a help standpoint. Because if you go back to some of the regular season matchups, particularly with Gabby Williams in the starting lineup, that was the help-off point. If they did want to go to post-ups with Tiana Charles or with Breonna Stewart, if Gabby Williams is on the floor, that's where Chelsea Gray is roaming and trying to get deflections and kind of disrupt those post-ups. With Stephanie Talbot's space, they couldn't do that. They couldn't do that comfortably. What did I do?
No, Stephanie Talbot gave them size, gave them defense, gave them spacing, gave them movement. And like we talked about earlier, not only does she have the shot, you have to close to her. She could be the closeout, keep your defense scrambling. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just a really good compliment. Like, I feel like the Storm were just able to piece together parts of what Gabby Williams did. Even a little thing like playing January with Sue Bird. It's like, all right, we can get pieces of this. We can kind of flow and translate that. And then being able to have their lineups going and play their starters deeper minutes while still kind of mixing people in is a different blend than the Storm we've seen before. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting point because it's like, okay, we talked about the bench and can they do this, can they do that? They may not have to because they played all of them for a reason. So that this time of year, Sue can go ahead and play however many minutes she needs to play. So we could expound and expand on that. But I thought Talbot being solid was great, and they needed that. I think it just gives a different element. When the Storm have that movement going with the talent they have, it's tough to deal with.
It's very tough to deal with.
Speaking of tough to deal with.
Sue Bird was very good in this game. I really enjoyed, as someone that loves passing, like, Sue Bird did a tremendous job of directing the flow of this offense. And she also did a great job of just pushing tempo. As simple as that is sometimes, her getting an outlet and kicking it ahead immediately, the Aces, their transition defense was just not good. Like, the number that was shouted out after this game is that the Storm won the fast break battle 16-0. And so much attention, and rightfully so, but so much attention was put on that zero number for the Aces because you know they want to get out and run. You know they want to force misses and then push, and you have Chelsea Gray throwing no looks. You have Kelsey Plum pulling up, yada, yada. Not enough was shown about the 16 points for the Seattle and like how Sue Bird, with those quick hit aheads, with the quick processing, with the long-range bombs, and the timeliness of those passes, helped give Seattle easy points in a game that was in the mud sometimes. We saw plenty of stretches pretty much in each quarter where neither team was making a shot. And Sue Bird give you that kind of transition juice, not even scoring herself, only 2 points in this game. But just her quick decision-making just kind of give Seattle some occasional buckets that they needed. I was very impressed with what she did there. Does that qualify as...
It's about time. We've only recorded 133 episodes to get to the Sue Bird praise that was deserved. Hey, when she's creating like that, it's tough. And I feel like we've seen Sue continue to ramp up. The throw aheads were great. Controlling the tempo was great. Making sure everyone was in the right spots offensively was great. The passing, whenever she got two on the ball, was great. The defense is where I wanted to tip my cap to Sue Bird. You wanted to ask about the matchup for Sue. I mentioned Kelsey Plum.
You did.
I was once again laughed out of the room on a podcast featuring Nikias and Monica. Seems to be a trend.
Wow.
But
what you trying to say?
Sue did what she was supposed to do. All your off-ball actions, I'm going to navigate. I'm going to keep the ball in front. I'm going to try and contest. I'll do whatever I have to do in pick and roll. And now we move forward. So looks like she wanted that matchup. She was working.
She was working.
Now you got to keep her away from Chelsea Gray.
Because Chelsea got her a few times. And it was like, oh, wait a minute. That's not what you want. And so, and even to that point, like I mentioned, the stagger ran for Kelsey Plum in the second quarter, like having her navigate those. And you touched on, you know, having a guards have some inverted action for Asia Wilson to help free her. They did some of that off the ball with using Kelsey as a screener. Not really the pick and roll variety yet. Like, I do wonder if Sue maintains the Kelsey Plum matchup, like, do the Aces try to see what that looks like in game two?
I would be shocked if Sue Bird is not put in action in different ways in game two. And I mean that with all respect in the world. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine the first play is going to be some sort of screening action between Plum and Asia. It's my guess.
Got to play this clip if they do so. I'll be roaming your timeline. I'll just be talking.
I'll just be talking. Don't worry about
it. There it is. On the Sue Bird front, one thing I also want to shout her out. I started the segment talking about how bad the screening was for the Aces. Sue Bird was nailing screens all game long. And her work in tandem with Breonna Stewart in particular just threw the Aces for a loop. They just did not know what to do with Sue Bird screening for Breonna Stewart off the ball. And I wonder, I guess I'll just ask you frankly, like, how can the Aces counter that?
Well, you're talking about just the pin downs or Stewart in general?
The pin downs for now. We can zoom out to the Stewart usage.
Well, I mean, you got to make a decision early. And I think you have to let your big try and navigate. Now, it's tough. I mean, if you remember, for those who need a comp, the Lakers ate with this set off of Anthony Davis for like at least a year and a half. We just hit at the elbow. Someone goes screens for AD. Now he curls and goes to work. So I think they just have to not give the switch so automatically. Give some support, get some help, try and navigate, protect the curl. But I think you need to at least mix and blend in an attempt to cover it. Because if it's a switch, they're just going right to the elbow. And they're clearing out and going to work from there. Now you have a different pressure point. Defend the action a little bit better. Try and take that off the table and then play out of that. So that's the biggest one for me. But Stewart is presenting an issue for the Aces right now. They've got to find a coverage they feel comfortable with. Switch is a mismatch. Two on the ball opens up a roll. And not just a roll, but it also opens up rotation and the Storm able to move the ball. Drop gives the pull-up. So which one are you going to choose? Because you got to pick one here shortly. And we've talked about the Aces defense doing what it does and being so important to them. But when they struggle is when you can see them searching for a coverage. And not because they can't stop something, because they're not sure what they want to do. And that's where I want to see just more of a purpose from the Aces on both ends of the floor.
I wonder, I mean, we ended up seeing so much of Jackie Young defended Breonna Stewart anyway because of those switches. Like, I wonder, do the Aces lean into that to a degree? Like, do you give Jackie Young the superb matchup in game two? With the, I guess, just with the thought process of, like, they're probably going to use those two to screen for each other anyway. And so if we're going to give up the switch, we're at least going to have the wing that has the most size versus Kelsey Plum getting the superb matchup. And now it's a whole nother, and Kelsey fights too, obviously. But there is just a size difference there. And it's a little bit harder to navigate the help from there. Like, again, just thinking out loud, like, I wonder if that's something that the Aces decide to lean into. For me, like, I just, like, trust your help to a certain degree is kind of where I land too. Like, all due respect to Sue Bird, who's obviously a tremendous shooter. Like, Sue took, what, 6 shots? Like, I would, if she's one, like, I would at least try to stunt and see if she's going to take the shot. She right can knock down the shot. But I'm saying, like,
it didn't take very long. Right back to the slander.
It's not slander at all. This is very much, especially with Stephanie Talbot in the lineup instead of Gabby Williams from a spacing standpoint. Like, it's just going to be the lesser of two evils, or you're picking your poison to a certain degree. Like, it's not a great answer. But, like, just giving up the switch as easily as they have on those corner pin downs, like, it doesn't seem tenable to me. So, like, if you have someone fighting over that screen to stay attached to Breonna Stewart, and then you have some help coming from another side just to kind of muck that up a little bit and give that player time to get back in front of Breonna, that's mostly what I mean. Not dare Sue Bird to beat you in that degree.
No, you're good. I keep coming back, though, throughout this conversation. The Aces, they have some things to clean up, but it doesn't, if they clean up one thing, things look a lot different to me. Mm-hmm. If the offensive process is better, it's a different game. If the defense is stronger, it's a different game. If they get Asia going, it's a different game. So I think for the Aces, it's a mindset. They've got to come with just less surprised what the Storm did. You saw the tape. Now you got to take care of business. Now, the tough part is losing home court means this one is pretty important because you are going to a frenzied Seattle. Now, obviously, that didn't matter last time you went to Seattle. Asia Wilson didn't care a single bit about what was going on, but the pressure ramps up and you need to make a statement in this game too, because if you let the Storm go up 2-0,
close out and sit, yeah,
my prediction smells a little bit better.
It just might. It's going to be up to the Aces to take care of business to close out the early portion of the home stretch, at least. Let's move to the Connecticut Sun and Chicago Sky.
Before we move on, I got to apologize to the Connecticut Sky. I mean, the Connecticut Sun.
There we go.
I apologize with disrespect immediately. Man, first off, this is playoff basketball. Inject it into my veins. Do you like pace? Cool. Go somewhere else. Do you like defense and mud? Come on, sit down with your boy. That's what you're going to get here. The Sun or the Sun, and what that means changes on the day. Like, I don't even have a comp for the Sun. This series feels like a Grizzly Spurs series from pick a year where it's just, hey, we might not be able to score, but you can't for a while either. I don't know if we gave the Sun the proper respect, and I wonder if that has to do with that game 3 against Dallas and whatever that was. But we did mention in the buildup, the Sun do have the physicality on both ends of the floor. They have the size on both ends of the floor. They have the ability to drive. They have the ability to cause problems for Chicago's bigs and protect the paint. And that just makes things a little bit different. They may not live in the mud like the Sky do, but they definitely pay rent and know how to get from month to month.
That is a tremendous line. My word, that's good stuff. I just want to shout out the Suns' defense overall, but their defense to start this game was insane. We did get a shot clock violation later in the first quarter from the Chicago Sky as well, but, like, they were amped in the half court. Alyssa Thomas is always hedging out with juice, but, like, good Lord, man. I don't know what you do. You think you're about to come off a pick, and here she comes with a perfect angle, whole lot of aggression, whole lot of length. You just can't do anything. And by the time you regain your composure, she's back on her assignment. Or she's not on her assignment. She's just parted at the nail. It's like, all right, bet. Yeah, try to drive against the 101 and see who you're coming to. And he just couldn't. The way that they were able to fluster Chicago's guards early on was not something that I saw coming. Like, we talked about this in the preview. Like, hey, the Liberty did have a little bit of success, like, ducking under. Like, is that a way that they're going to slow down the guards? Connecticut said, no, nah, forget all that. Courtney Vandersloot, you trying to come off? Here's Alyssa Thomas. Here's Jonquel Jones showing high. If you want to go 1-3 pick and roll, here's DeJuana Bonner. And they just could not find the flow early on. And I think that also put a little bit more emphasis on how well the bigs were, A, just how well they're going to play, but B, how well they're going to shoot. This is kind of, not a fun bet you want to make, but this is kind of the bet that you want to make against Chicago. Like, turn them into a team that has to take a lot of threes. Because if they're playing at their best, they just want to slice you up with a bunch of cuts and a lot of off-ball movement that gets you going one way and you're in rotation. If you're now just saying, hey, knock down these pops, and I think Candace Parker and Emma Miesman combined to take 13 threes. They made five of them, so what, 38% if I'm doing quick math? Like, that's a fine number. I think that is a number that Connecticut can deal with if it means the Sky just aren't going to feast in the paint. 24 points in the paint for Chicago Sky is not a winning formula for them. No matter how equipped they are to deal with winning in the mud, they don't want to win where they're not getting paint points. And so if you have Candace Parker, who, this is something I forgot to touch on during the preview, Candace Parker shot north of 60% from three on volume during the regular season series. She shot the absolute net off the ball. And so, like, regression from 60%, again, that 38% number is still good. But, like, the Sun are like, we were in all four of these games and y'all shot like this throughout the four matchups. If y'all are only having a decent shooting night among the bigs anyway, if you're only having a good shooting night instead of abnormally high, what is this turn to 2K sliders down? That brings them right to where they want you to be. And then you add in the fact that Allie Quigley didn't have it going. Courtney Vandersloot really didn't have it going. You're not worried about Rebecca Gardner from deep. Julie Alamon, I think, kick off the second quarter, knocked down a contested three to kind of start off a shot clock violation to kick off that quarter. But, like, she's someone that teams have shown comfort helping off of. If you don't have that, Connecticut's okay. And, like, even with Kalia Copper, how much of an impact did she have in the half court? Like, I didn't really feel her. Like, they didn't let her shake loose either. Like, she scored, what, I think 9 points in that first quarter. And just about all of those were either transition looks or early offense looks. If you got the Sky just saying, hey, you got to execute something against us, like, Kalia Copper is their dynamic, give me the ball, I can get downhill threat among their starting unit. If you're able to load up against her too, like, it's just going to turn into a lot of side to side for Chicago in the half court. And, like, they have the talent to kind of make that work, but that is not a diet that they want to live off of.
No, I'd agree. And touching on what you mentioned, the Sky absolutely need their guard play. I mean, we learned that after game one of the Liberty series, but in this one, they're definitely going to need it. And so you mentioned Copper's usage. One thing that was clear, whether it was Copper or Vandersloot, there was a clear emphasis from Connecticut. Anytime you're paint, like, we're going to work to keep you in front. And if you do get past us, someone's going to be there. There's going to be help here. In pick and roll, hey, we might throw in an under, but also we're totally fine just keeping a big right in front, fighting right over the screen and making it tough, no space, taking things away. And I think the drop against Courtney Vandersloot was tough because, I mean, you contain the penetration. There's no easy kickouts. So, you know, how many of those pull-ups are you going to take? The turning the corner isn't quite there like normal. What does that do to you? How do you get the flow to Copper? Because she's not really beating scrambling defenses a lot in this series so far. So now she has to create an advantage. That's the biggest part. How do this guy use their guards to create advantages or at least keep the Sun in rotation? And it's going to be tough because You know, is it through post-ups? Is it trying to attack Heidemann? Where do you find the holes to get your guards going? Because that makes things look different.
I guess we're there. Like, what do you do to do that? And I kind of key in again, like, how do you unlock Kalia Copper in a setting that isn't transition or the first, like, 6 seconds of the clock following a miss? Because I feel like they're going to have to figure that out. Like, something that I did touch on very briefly in the preview pod was, like, I was kind of surprised that the coverage that Connecticut threw at Kalia Copper during the regular season series. I'm expecting just an under, we dare you to shoot. Like, no, we have our big at the level. We're going to string this out. We're going to force you to give up the ball. Or we're going to force you to make quick reads. And Kalia Copper is not as good as she is. She's not a natural playmaker. She's not a quick decision maker in that regard. And I was like, okay, this is an interesting bet. Like, I do wonder if she's able to sit down, you know, before the series starts, if she's able to key in, like, hey, this is the coverage I'm going to see. Let me get the ball out early. Like, does that open up more things for Chicago? Because if Kalia Copper, if you're putting two on the ball, like, again, in general, that's a good thing. If she's able to figure that out, now who's she kicking to? Who's making the plays if she's drawn to? And so, like, that gamble and that kind of risk is baked in. But for now, like, they've stuck with that. She didn't have much of an effect in the half court in game one. And I do wonder how Chicago gets creative to open things up for her. And two, like, how much of an emphasis will it be to do that with her, considering what you just said about Courtney Vanderzoo and Allie Quigley? Like, they weren't really super impactful offensively in this one. Like, I would imagine that the emphasis is going to be to get at the very least Courtney Vandersloot. The emphasis may be higher to get her going and figure out a way to shake her loose more so than getting Kalia Copper to on-ball reps.
Oddly enough, I think the off-ball actions and reps are going to be just as important, if not more important, for these sky guards. Get your back cuts going. Use that as a pressure release. Get back to using Miesemann and Candace Parker as hubs. Try and get more cutting, be more, be less predictable in the half court, get some more movement, some flow, multiple actions, make the Sun guard different things and see if you can play out of the flow there. This isn't quite the easy exploit series quite yet. They may find one, but it's not necessarily a Liberty series where, hey, we do this, we'll get this, now we play out of that. You're going to have to go find it. So the Sky, when they're at their best, is when they do have that blend going in the half court. So it's going to be, how can they get to that? How do they get towards that? What do they do with it? So for me, I think it's going to be mixing in the off-ball actions and hoping you can get some cuts going and use that to your advantage.
I got you. Before I move off of Chicago specifically, can I just shout out Candace Parker very quickly for having one of the most incredible playoff games that I have ever seen? Just statistically, 19 points, 18 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, and 6 blocks. A singular steal off of a playoff 5x5 with a 19-18 double-double. She can't retire. She can't do it. Can't allow it. She's too good.
I've been telling you.
She's too good.
You got to buckle up, man.
That it just can't happen. You can't have this kind of game to kick off of playoffs. Like, no. It was insane. Actually insane. And like, she's getting buckets any kind of way, crucial threes, turnaround jumpers, drive to the basket, post-ups against smalls. She's the direct of traffic above the break as a playmaker. Defensively, just everywhere as a help defender, playing the lanes, active hands. There wasn't a singular positive trait that wasn't on display from Candace Parker during that game one. Just give her flowers while you can still give them to her. Like, that was incredible basketball.
I agree 100%. How do you feel about this guy's bigs in totality in that game?
Like, I think it was an okay performance overall, but like, they are also facing a front court that is, if not as good as them overall, like, they have, it's a particular blend that can bother them and that you have to match with them. And so, like, okay isn't good enough. Very, very diverse, you know, very deep analysis there, but like, I don't think it was enough. considering what you got from Alyssa Thomas, what you got from Jonquel Jones, particularly early, and really what she did defensively. Because Jonquel, that was a really good defensive game from Jonquel, in my opinion. And you know what Bree Jones does as a post-up threat. And so, like, I don't think their bigs did enough to really neutralize what Connecticut was able to do. And the fact that Connecticut was able to own the paint to that degree on both ends of the floor, like, that's the biggest reason why they won. No pun intended. But I think that's the biggest reason they won that game one. Actually, while I'm on Connecticut being big, how'd you feel about the closing lineup? Because I am intrigued.
I like the idea of it. I like playing what you could say is probably your three best players together. You have enough where you can use them in different ways. You can space Jonquel if you want. Alyssa Thomas with handoffs or cutting ability can make things interesting. And now you have multiple players who can run handoffs or pick and roll. This guy only has so many people to guard them, and he can get you help on the glass. So anytime the Sun can engage a big and open up a roll or a short roll or pop, that's going to make their offense have something to lean on. So I like the idea of closing with that. Like, hey, you got to deal with all of us, as opposed to maybe forcing into, well, we have to play X, Y, or Z. And especially when you have that size and you still have some creation, it gets interesting.
I think it's a really fun bet from Connecticut. And this is a lineup that played 10 minutes total during the regular season series. So 10 minutes within four games is, you know, shockingly enough, that's just not a lot. So closing basically the last 5 minutes of this one was interesting to me. But it kind of reveals, like, the very quiet thing about the Chicago Sky that I don't think has gotten enough talk just because of how good they are anyway. But, like, among the starting group, Allie Quigley's probably the only shooter that you're scared of in that lineup. She's not the only one in the lineup that can knock down shots. Again, Candace Parker lit the Nets on fire during the regular season series. She led the Sky in three-point attempts. But, like, they're okay with letting Emma Meserman take shots if that means she's not disrupting things inside. They're okay with Candace taking shots from outside if she's not drawing fouls or posting up smaller players. They're okay with Kalia Copper taking shots. They're okay with Courtney Vandersloot not penetrating the paint and beating your tilted defense with her amazing court vision. And so because you're fine with just helping off of them or not having to fight over a bunch of screens, that allows Jonquel or Alyssa Thomas to be your nominal three. And Alyssa Thomas is one of the best defenders on earth anyway. So it's not like that would be a problem for her. But, like, she's okay just being like, all right, bet. I'm just going to duck under if necessary. But I can also blow some things up. And if we do want to get more aggression, if Alyssa Thomas is doing that, one, she's the best or second best player in the league at doing that. And beyond that, now it's Jonquel and Rianna Jones and all that size behind that. So even if you're able to short roll and, or cut in behind that, you got to deal with that size at the rim. And that's a lot. And with them sizing up to that degree, it also puts Chicago in a bit of a bind on the other end from their perimeter, because now it's DeWanna Bonner's your two. And DeWanna Bonner is not afraid to get shots up, period. But DeWanna Bonner is not afraid to post up a mismatch. And so now if it's Kalia Copper's guarding her normally, and now you have to worry about Rebecca Gardner, very, very, very good defender, but smaller than Kalia Copper. Or it's Allie Quigley, who fights but is much smaller than Kalia Copper. Or if it's Courtney Vandersloot defending DeWanna Bonner, who is a good defender but also smaller than Kalia Copper. You just have size mismatches all over the floor. And so you don't even need to run anything exotic in the half court if you're Connecticut, which we both kind of questioned, hey, what's going on with Connecticut's process in the half court sometimes. You can simplify it to the highest order now. Because now it's just, we're just bigger than all of you. Let's just find whoever has the hot hand. We'll run a ball screen early, which, quick shout out to DeWanna Bonner, the playmaking surprised me in this one. And they have entrusted her quite a bit with their late game offense over the last two games. So I will be keeping an eye on that. But they can go empty corner ball screen with DeWanna Bonner and Alyssa Thomas and go from there. If the shot's there, cool. If it's not, we can just swing it around a lot and post up with Jonquel or post up with Bree Jones and be fine. And so I wonder how Chicago counters it. Like, I think the easy answer to that is like, okay, we'll just throw out three bigs out there too. Let's go with Azaree, Emma, Candace. And then it's Courtney Vandersloot and Kalia Copper at that point. And you just kind of duke it out from there. Like, I wonder if James Wade blinks to that degree. But if there's no adjustment like that, that's going to be a tough lineup for the Sky to deal with, I feel like.
Well, I mean, it also, hey, Allie Quigley, you got to guard somebody.
Yeah.
When y'all got to guard? there's only one Hydeman out there. So we can get interesting and do some different things. The Sun, just, where are you? Do you feel better about the Sun after this game? Do you feel the same about the Sun? Where are you at?
I'm still trying to gauge it, honestly, because like, two tweets I'll reference, going to take an L on one of them, but two tweets I'll reference. One, I was like, I think the Sun are just the best team that I've never believed in. Because like, I've just had this weird, they don't get it. And a lot of that just stemmed from how the Jonquel usage has gone since last year's playoff series and throughout this regular season. It's like, why do y'all not just consistently have this with Jonquel? And then you add in like some of the questions I have with the guards making decisions. Like, okay, y'all are really good. You led the W in net rating. Like, you were a game behind this guy in the Aces for the best record in the league. I get it. But like, when it matters, I just don't know what y'all are going to do. And so from that standpoint, the fact that you were able to get a tough game one win on the road against Chicago and just really muck things up for them for most of the night, like, that is very impressive to me. The other thing, I ended up tweeting out, yeah, Sky in three or something after the Kalia Copper, Dewana Bonner tie-up. That just kept going and going and going and going. And just to see that reaction, to see how the crowd was electrified, I was like, oh, yeah, this is so. I mean, my official prediction is on the pod. Like, I'm still going Sky in four, but like, I just like, yeah, Sky in three after seeing that. And the Sun responded with a bucket, a stop, and then another bucket after that ordeal. And it was like, oh, this is a really good response. They didn't wilt. We didn't get hero ball from them after that stretch. This is good stuff. Like, this is some maturation. This is some real poise that I feel like they've lacked in critical moments. And that's a good sign. And so I will say the game one was encouraging. I don't know if it's full blown. All right, I believe in you, Connecticut, because, you know, truthfully, like, I'm still not there. But those were good things to see them respond the way that they did. And even in the first quarter, like, they defended super well. Chicago still bounced right back in this three-point game in the first. That very well could have followed the typical Chicago script, where they start slowly, get on the roll, the home crowd's behind them, and now they're up 33-17 midway through the second. Or 33-21 midway through the second, something like that. That didn't happen. And so really encouraging stuff from the Sun. I'll take my L on the Sky in three tweet and not believing. Well, maybe not that part yet, but it was good stuff from the Sun. They deserve their props.
No, they do. They do. And I think they do present some different challenges. Like, you said you felt better about the Jonquel usage. I think it's going to be fun to see how this guy handled that going forward. Mm-hmm. Her ability to pop just kind of throws a little bit of a wrinkle in this guy's defense. Usually they like to show or drop and then pre-rotate. It's a little tougher to pre-rotate to a pop. So that just throws you out of rhythm, number one. Number two, when she does roll and you do get the pre-rotation, it's hard to meet Jonquel Jones early.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the same as, hey, I can meet you at the elbow. Like, she's right there at the rim. So you have to deal with that. That's a different aspect. And the fact that they have so many bigs they can throw at you just makes it tough. But the Liberty had bigs they could throw at you, but the finishing wasn't quite the same in that sense. Now you got to deal with, hey, we're coming in the paint, rolling, attacking, face up and attack. That makes it interesting. Again, the Sun are going to need their guard play just as much. They need Bonner to be able to self-create. They need Williams to be able to self-create and hit shots. They need their bigs to hit the glass to give them more of a margin for error offensively. Right? They just need different things. But the Sun have definitely shown that they can get in the mud, they can compete, and they're not going to go away. So, buckle up, Chicago.
Buckle up, indeed. Last question I have for you, and pertains as it pertains to the game one. We've talked a little bit about Breonna Jones. We've talked a little bit about Ezra Stevens, Rebecca. How did you feel about the benches overall in this one? Because I felt like they were going to play a bigger role in this one than they did overall, at least from Chicago's side. Like, it didn't feel like a strong bench game for them.
Well, Azrae just didn't hit shots. And it's a tougher series for Gardner because the paint touches aren't going to be as easy. Mm-hmm. And there's not necessarily a true matchup for her outside of Bonner as far as, hey, go do the defensive thing. So how much of the impact is going to be there? And for the Sun, for me, it's, I imagine it's Jones or bust, and whatever else we get during those stretches, we get, to me. Just winning time. No disrespect.
I got you. Like, I enjoyed the Asian A character in minutes, which she's just been solid to close out the season. But even then, like, she didn't play much. And I would suspect part of that is just we need the spacing when it really does matter. And if we're going to have someone with questionable spacing, like, we can just, like, they close the game with the three bigs. Like, all right, if we're going to have a non-spacer out there that can, you know, supplement us with some offense, like, let's just go with Breonna Jones because she's just going to give us a threat as a post-up, as opposed to hoping Dejanay knocks down shots from the perimeter or she's able to attack a closeout. So I get that they're still keeping an eye on the Odyssey Sims minutes. Like, just, you've already hit on it, we both hit on it, but, like, just the guard play in general for Connecticut is just going to be super important. And so if you do have a situation to where Natisha Hydeman or Courtney Williams just don't have it going, like, Odyssey seems to be the third, and we'll have to see how she picks that up. But yeah, this is a fun game. This is a fun game with more antics than I anticipated, to be completely honest. But this is a fun one. I think it's going to be a really fun series. And shout out to both of the road teams winning the game ones. Not sure how I just made that realization, but yeah, lower seeds got it done in the game ones.
Well, that means the semifinals have officially started.
Ah, I see. Actually, I'm so glad you said this as we could transition to some free throws to close it out. You know what one of my questions was for you?
What's up?
What's your least favorite sports cliche?
My least favorite sports cliche?
Yes.
I don't know if I have a least favorite sports cliche, although I could probably look it up real quick. For me, it's when they're misused. That's my biggest pet peeve. Like, when there's actual action that's happened and it's just like, oh, the mindset. Look at
they just wanted it more.
The challenge being embraced. They wanted it more. Like, there's so much more to the story than what you just wrapped it up as. Like, so many other things happen. Or, like, when a cliche is used and it just doesn't make any sense. Like, no, dog. Like, they were down by 20. These things had to happen. What's your least favorite cliche?
Oh God. I think the wanted it more is what gets me every time. I'm just like there are some examples where you can see a player making a low effort play or something like that. But ultimately, like, no, this team didn't want it more. Like, they shot better. They executed better. They did better things. Like, I don't think the other team wanted, like, down the stretch when the Sun were able to close it out against Chicago. The Sun didn't want it more than Chicago. Like, the Sun performed better. They executed. They got crucial buckets. They were able to kill it on the offensive glass like they did all game long. And even with that, they didn't out-rebound the Chicago Sky because they wanted the ball more. They out-rebounded them because they have a bunch of size and really good rebounders. Like, that's just... Like, you want to tell me the Sky, led by Candace Parker, didn't want something enough?
So that bothered you.
I'm just like, no, that's not, no. Like, that, to your, like, bouncing off what you said, like, like, things are happening. We can talk about what's happening versus who wanted it more between Kalia Coffer and Dewana Bonner when they were wrapped up. The answer is yes. That's what made the moment awesome. So that's, I am off my, I'm off my rocker on that one. Let me continue. Oh, will Yuta Watanabe play more games in the Nets uniform than Joe Harris this season?
No.
Okay. Do you think Giannis has improved?
Yes.
Okay. Can more than one player have the same nickname, even if it's simply their initials and jersey number?
Depends.
Depends on what?
Depends on the scenario. Are they the same age? Was one a legend? Now one has it. Give me some more deets on that.
I made the mistake of hopping on Twitter earlier today, recording on a Monday night. I had the mistake of going on Twitter, and we are arguing on who gets to be called CP3 between Chris Paul and Candace Parker.
Why is that an argument? Why are you arguing that?
Thank you.
Why is that an argument?
Why does that? What are we doing?
Who cares? They both are. No one's going to think, oh, that's disrespectful to Chris Paul. That's dumb. I'm sorry.
That's very, yeah.
Let me rephrase it. That's not dumb. I don't think we should be using energy towards that.
I'll say that's dumb.
Like, I may slip and call Candace Parker CP3 just as a quick typing thing, but like, I'm not going to be upset.
They've both been called, they are both called CP3. They play in two different leagues. They both have the same initials for their names and the same jersey numbers. They're both legends of their respective sports. Candace more so than Chris, but they are still both respective legends in their sports. Why does that matter? It's dumb. Anyway, on that.
Oh, jeez.
It's dumb. We don't. Anyway, while we're on the Candace Parker front, because I was asked about this yesterday, I will ask you, what's the NBA comp for Candace Parker?
The NBA comp for Candace Parker?
Because the closest I could come to was, like, I went KG.
This is going to sound kind of wild, but I don't know if there is a direct comp. She's probably not such a unique basketball player. Like, I can understand KG, but she just does so much on both ends of the floor. KG might be the one if we're going to do that. Just because of the defensive contributions, the offensive contributions. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what she can't do on the court.
Yeah. So that's what I was like. Maybe. But like even then, like it doesn't feel one-to-one. Like I floated this to friend of the program, Mark Schindler of WNBA.com. He's like, man, Candace had a little bit more juice off the ball, off the dribble. I was like, yeah, that's probably fair. Yeah. So like, I don't know. So I was just stewing on that one. I'll still try to find one that's a little bit better, but KG seems to be a nice starting point. Last one I have, just to bother you, of course. Have you seen the Manti Te'o doc?
There's a doc on that?
There's a two-episode thing on Netflix, yes.
Oh, my God. I've never felt older in my life. There's a doc on the Manti Te'o thing? I was outside.
I was outside. That's amazing.
I was outside for that. That was a thing. Like,
that's the name of the podcast.
Oh yo, don't do that. I don't even know if I want to go back to that place. Golly. Oh, man. Did you watch the doc?
I did. There was so much going on. Like, I mean, the story itself, there's just so much that went on. But, like, getting some background and then hearing from the person that was involved, and there is so much going on. Like, the Deadspin people that, like, broke the news and stuff, like, they were interviewed for it, and they were talking about some of their process and getting the information. It's a lot. It's a lot. Man. Two episodes, hour piece. You know, 2 hours of watch time if you have it to burn at some point this week. But
I don't know if I want to go back through that, man. I hope he's healed and happy and doesn't move forward. That was a lot then. So you're telling me there's more details now?
It's.
Is he involved in the doc, or are they just making it about him?
Oh no, he's in it. But
he's in it. Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes me feel. I might go check it out now.
Yeah, like all of the major characters and also some side characters were involved in this one. And okay. That's where I was like, okay, let's hear about this.
That makes it a little different. If he's there, it's a little bit different for me. But no, I've not watched it. I don't know if I'm going to rush to that. That's some trauma.
I feel you. I say, well, luckily you have time to think about it. The playoff games are 6 days apart, so.
Oh man, I think I love this dynamic of where we have so much W to push, and you were just angry at the schedule
because we have so much W to push.
I keep trying to tell you, give you a hint, let you know, hey, this might be the way to do it. Nah, man, I don't want to hear none of that. Okay,
I'm yelling at clouds. My apologies.
They're just trying to get to as many Sundays as they can.
I know. That's all they're doing. You're not to be clear. You are not incorrect. You are not incorrect at all. I am just personally annoyed. that is all it is. Do you have free throw questions?
Do I have free throws? Yes. When's the last time Redacted watched Giannis Antetokounmpo play?
When was his last game? Because that might be the answer. Based on the commentary, that has to be the answer.
Think he saw it? You think he saw that series?
No, not at all.
We got to talk about that at some point. Like, one, players, the way they think about other players, like the more content that gets created and the more that door opens, you got to realize a lot of your faves don't like your faves or respect their game.
Oh, I've had to deal with some of that with my favorite player of all time. These are the takes.
If locker room takes ever really got out, you'd be side-eyeing a lot of different people. That's no disrespect. It just kind of is what it is. And I learned very quickly, oh, there's some players that just, nope. won't compliment them. Follow-up question. Which former player having a bad take or take you disagree with would hurt the worst?
A player that if they had a bad take that would hurt the most? That's currently out.
Yeah.
I haven't heard any off the top of my head at the very least. I haven't heard anything egregious from Dwayne Wade yet.
Yeah, but if D-Wade comes out with a wild take.
That would stink. that would really stink.
I don't think it would ever happen for multiple reasons, but if Rasheed Wallace had a wild one, I'd have to eat that for a little bit.
Why are you saying this?
Hey, man. What do you think about this? I don't want to talk about it.
I'll make sure I keep that mailbag question in the chamber then. All right.
All right, here you go. Why did Yusuf Nurkic do that to that man?
One, I don't know. Two, do you want to spell it out for the listeners that have not seen
it? Oh, if you haven't seen it, there's a clip. Yusuf Nurkic rolling down the lane, destroyed Poirier, turned that man into crème brûlée.
Wow.
From Poirier to Poisson.
Oh. Okay. This is
what? I can't flex the French? Come on, man.
Yeah,
I just called him fish.
Can't flex the we can't use that podcast title.
Nope. Udonis Haslam said, "I ain't never been afraid of no man. Are you ready for the smoke this year?"
What smoke?
Okay, that's fine. Don't worry about it. That's a no. Solid no. Quick question. Oh, by the way, I'm drafting my fantasy football team right now.
Okay.
So far, we have Patrick Mahomes, Austin Eckler, Debo Samuel, and Mark Andrews.
That ain't bad.
I have $78 left.
How many more players do you need to get?
Ooh, 12.
You have to get 12 players with $78?
Stop doing math. Let me get Saquon real quick, dog. Oh, yeah, I'm about to
Brother.
Be 30. I'm about to be 30. What's up?
Brother, you're just not going to have a team. Your team's about to be 6 players in cap holds. What do you mean?
Why do you think I pimped the big three strategy so much? Let's go.
How are you making luxury tax payments in fantasy football? I didn't even know that was allowed.
No, live take. Do I need Saquon? Is Saquon good? I need it.
Real I don't.
Quick. You got 5 seconds, guys.
I wouldn't do that.
All right.
You might have Saquon for like 7 games. I don't think that's what you want to
do. Oh, that price though. No, I'm not gonna do it. All right. Anyways, last question. Where did LeBron have more fun? Was it when he took the pick and said, "I can't believe this is my life," or dancing at the Kendrick Lamar show?
absolutely the Kendrick Lamar show. I feel like definitely the Kendrick Lamar show.
Man was living his best life. You love to see it. Those are my free throws. That's all I had. Hopefully we had some fun.
We definitely got there. Shout out Yusuf Nurkic. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, Google, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
So Derek Carr, huh?